fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
And we are off. And the question right off the top here becomes, can three guys behind three microphones make as much noise, as much nonstop chatter as we've heard at Cardinals OTAs so far this week? Man, we're about to find out. Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard, you guys have it in you. I'm just along for the ride over here at Pauly Podcast. It is Cardinals Underground. And I tell you what, if you had your back to the field, if you turned around, Darren, I mean, just the sounds of football, you could tell it's high tempo just based on what it sounds like. Am I off base here?
No, I do think that, you know, now that we've seen Steve Wilks and his coaching staff and how they operate on the field quite a few times, both even in phase two, before we got to the phase three part with OTA starting and but with the music and just bouncing around and making sure that everything's going right. And even to the point of like, okay, we really, there was always an emphasis on tempo under Bruce Arians too. And any coach wants that tempo. But I have noticed that is a serious, I mean, if any of those coaches, anybody sees somebody going a little bit slower than they expect them to go, they hear about it. And that's one of the things I've noticed right away.
They want everybody to finish the plays. They want everybody to get back into the huddle quickly and call out the plays quickly. And I think that sort of thing pays dividends, because when you get into the season and a lot of things can be going on at different points in games, but if you have this baseline of what you want to do, you can really eliminate mental mistakes if you're lined up quick enough. If you understand what you're doing, I think you can harken back to these days and just say, okay, this is just like OTAs. This is like the offseason. I think that's important for these guys to understand the standard, and these coaches are obviously going to push this from the very beginning through training camp, through the regular season.
One little thing I noticed, which is a little bit different, is if a guy makes an interception, you want him to run it back to the house. Okay, every time you sprint it out. If you can make a catch in the flat, you sprint it out. And these guys have emphasized that. One of the things I've noticed is defensively, if you knock a pass down, if there's a pass that's incomplete, they're all over the defense to go pick up the ball. I mean, it's an incomplete pass. I mean, in a game, it wouldn't matter. Go get the ball.
Right.
And that's been a little, I think it's taken a couple players back a little bit. Like, oh, okay, we got to go grab the incomplete pass.
It's not just the pace of the tempo, as you mentioned, but it's the fact that it's just one play to the next, one drill to the next. It's just nonstop. It's everything in between when the ball is in play that is nonstop. And I've noticed a number of guys, most of them rookies, undrafted rookies, who are coming to the sideline and they're gasping for air. Some of these guys are looking to try and catch their breath. And you realize this is a much different tempo than they had experienced at Boise State, for example.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're trying to learn a playbook. You're trying to get in good physical condition after you've been training, but training in a different way during the draft prep area. You're training for the 40 and the 3-cone and all these different things. This cardiovascularly is a lot different when you're doing these types of practices. Add in the heat out here.
Yeah, it's a little warmer than
100 degrees.
Right.
So
some guy from Spud State isn't used to 100 degrees.
It's a huge assimilation all across the board for those guys.
Here's the other thing, and we all know, okay, we've been around long enough. Even Kyle's been around long enough. If you don't have the plays, if you don't have the players, you don't have the playmakers, if you don't have the talent, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
But when the vast majority of games in the NFL are decided by a single score or less, the little things do matter. And Daniel Buchanan told us moments ago in front of his locker that he loves the attention to detail. The little things become big things in the NFL, and they make a big difference on game day. And just from looking afar and watching from the sideline where us media guys are, just as much as the coaches are harping on the little things and the detail, I think that might pay big dividends come September.
Well, that's the idea. The whole reason you harp on the little details and finishing or picking up every loose ball that you see or anything is on the minute chance that at some point in some game, it's a game changer. You know, I joke about the incomplete pass, but maybe it sparks you on a ball that you think is an incomplete pass, and then later they decide, oh, after replay, it was a fumble, and everybody stopped, and you picked it up, so there was a clear recovery. It's little things like ingraining it that could change a game. And you're right. A lot of these games are one-score games, or at least you're hoping your team is good enough that it's all these games are one-score games, and maybe it turns. And you know, I've talked to a couple of veterans, and I think now that we've gotten through the draft and we've gotten this class in here, and everybody's had a little bit of a chance to understand the coaches, and offensively they understand a little bit of what Mike McCoy is trying to do, and that kind of thing. I would hope there's optimism in mid-May, but I do believe there's a real optimism. It's real easy to look at this division and say, well, Seattle's still Seattle with Russell Wilson, and we all think that the Rams obviously had a good year last year, and they seem to be loaded, and it feels like the 49ers are on an uptick. You know, where does that leave the Cardinals? But there is an optimism, and we'll, you know, we got so long to go, and so many things can change. But in mid-May, what you're looking for is genuine optimism, and I think right now there's genuine optimism, and there needs to be that. You should be able to have that right now.
If nothing else, this approach by the coaching staff, it demands that you stay locked in mentally, that they just have to be focused, and that's a good thing. You know, there might have been some times, and I think this goes with any roster that's been with a coaching staff for a number of years, where maybe, hey, I got this, and that is not the case right now, because guys don't know what's coming next. Everyone's pretty much on the same level playing field when it comes to the playbook. Even I had a chance to ask Coach Wilkes about, you know, Josh Rosen. He expects him to catch up. He's been cramming and studying with Byron Leftwich and Mike McCoy, which brings us to the quarterback question. Because on day one of OTAs, and Kyle, you're right there in the locker room. We all were. But give me your thoughts, because based on the reaction from some of the guys, whether it was DJ Humphreys or other players in that locker room, you could tell there's already some early respect for Josh Rosen, the rookie.
Yeah, I agree. He comes in and people talk about his cockiness, and we'll see if that plays out, if he becomes a guy that's cocky and if that ever becomes a divisive issue. But right now, it's a confidence, and he's still respectful of the veterans. You can tell the way he's in the locker room. He's not brash. He's not doing anything to get attention. He's just kind of staying in line. But he does have confidence, which at quarterback is so essential, because like you said, DJ Humphreys is talking about it. When you're in the huddle, you have to believe in that quarterback. The quarterback needs to be clear and concise and tell you exactly what needs to happen on this play. And if the quarterback can't do it, it leads to a lot of misinformation or people don't understand what's going on. And I think that's a really important part of being a quarterback. And so far he's done a good job of that.
I was talking to Justin Pugh a little bit about this, or there was a few of us talking to him about this. And he said this, and it wasn't in a rude way. It was just kind of matter-of-factly when somebody asked if he was surprised that Rosen was able to handle the huddle like that. And he said, no, he was a top 10 pick. He was projected to go high. And I don't disagree. If you're a quarterback and somebody's going to spend a top 10 pick on you, you better have the demeanor to run a huddle, whether you're a rookie or not.
I guess I'm treating it more in terms of what we've seen, not just the huddle. And look, let's not just take that for granted, because on day one of rookie minicamp, there was Mike McCoy trying to get his offensive linemen teaching them literally how to huddle, because some of these guys had never done it in the college game. But when it comes to UCLA and the system they ran, I expect him to be able to run the huddle. It was the demeanor in which he didn't maybe have the nerves that some guys might have in that situation, especially since there were a lot of regulars in that huddle. You know, Sam Bradford's on his own plan. And then going beyond that, it was similar to what Christian Kirk said after rookie minicamp, talking to Chad Williams, just the sort of ball he throws and the timing and the touch. And you could tell beyond even what Chad Williams said, and he was very complimentary, just in his eyes, like, oh, yeah, no, he can definitely spin it. And he compared him to the same sort of football that Sam Bradford's throwing, which was very interesting.
They both said
a similar ball.
Yeah. And I think what stood out to me, just watching his footwork a little bit, when you see young guys, especially when they've come, depending on what system you come out of college, your footwork is a little bit messed up, especially from under center. But Josh Rosen does a nice job of always staying balanced, keeping his feet in line with where he's throwing it. And a lot of times you look at the accuracy issues and it comes back to how you're lining up your base. And I think he does a nice job of being very technical and proficient with what he needs to do on the lower half. And I think that is ultimately why he does find success.
There's a part of me that wants, I mean, we've gone through one rookie mini camp and, you know, very little of the OTAs at this point. You know, I don't think anybody, I think it's a positive sign the direction he's going. I hesitate to anoint anything at this point with Josh Rosen for multiple reasons. And I would get concerned about getting too far ahead. I mean, when we look at a couple of the most recent examples of rookie quarterbacks, or at least the ones that are popping into my head, rookie quarterbacks that end up winning that job or should have won the job going right away. I think of the Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn situation a few years ago. And obviously Russell Wilson was a third round pick. That surprised everybody except for the people in Seattle. And he outplayed this guy that they had just signed as a free agent. That made sense starting right away. I think of last year with Tom Savage and Deshaun Watson, and thinking to myself, everybody was saying, why is Deshaun Watson not starting? Tom Savage is who he is. And that ended up being a little bit of a problem, and they made a quick switch. Even Mike Glennon, all due respect to him, who's on this team right now, you know, a lot of people were wondering why he would have started over Trubisky. Now, that was a little bit different of a situation with as much money as Mike Glennon was given last year with the Bears. But regardless, when I bring it back to this team, and you made the point, the ball that Sam Bradford throws is similar to the one Josh Rosen throws. I know you want to get to the future and all that stuff, but to me, Sam Bradford isn't Matt Flynn. I mean, he's a legit quarterback, and I just think that whatever Josh Rosen shows right now, and I could be, you know, he could end up blowing up all the way through camp, and then you just don't have a choice. But to me, if all things being equal, you would seriously think about making sure Bradford's in there, because when he's healthy, he's shown he's going to do it when the lights are on, or has shown, and you'd be a little bit more leery about Rosen. I get the direction we're going. But I guess I'm one of those people in the end that would kind of like pump the brakes on the hype train in May about a rookie quarterback.
I tell you, I was most definitely in your camp. You know, when we heard the Jim Moores of the world, some of the other national analysts, the Bucky Brooks saying, you know what, there's an immediate path to starting for Josh Rosen. Mm-hmm. I said, come on. Number one, you got Sam Bradford, another, you know, former number one overall pick. And then number two, just the degree of difficulty of being a rookie and being a starter in the NFL. But after seeing some of the reaction from some of the Cardinals players and then seeing them on the field yourself, you're like, okay. And then you realize, all right, they're going to run a lot of stuff where they're getting rid of the ball quickly. Yeah. A lot of like one or two reads, you know, maybe 3 to 5 step drop at the most. And then you're going to give the ball to David Johnson with impunity, including a fullback. And you realize, you know what, if you had to start the season, if indeed that was the case and he somehow won the job, you could win games with that formula. I'm convinced just seeing him a little bit. And obviously, it's going to be totally different against the, you know, defense is going to scheme for you all week. But just seeing that little bit and hearing everything about how intelligent he is and how he's run three different systems and he's a guy who can make 1, 2, 3, 4 reads and go through his progressions, it's intriguing. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and that was the idea coming out, is everybody said that Rosen is the most pro-ready quarterback among these four at the top of the draft. And I think that'll probably play out in the preseason. But it goes back to Darren's point. If this was Josh Rosen against a guy like Tom Savage, then I think there's real momentum where Josh Rosen could have won that job early. But when you have such a veteran quarterback, a former number one overall pick himself, Savage was a sixth or seventh rounder, I think. We're talking about a guy who, you know, several years ago now, but Sam Bradford was talked about the exact same way, and it's never been a lack of performance with Sam Bradford. So that's why, you know, I definitely lean toward what Darren says. But it's a great thing either way. If Josh Rosen excels in the offseason, makes it even a little bit of a conversation, and knowing that, you know, eventually if he looks like that already, he's going to get those reins at some point, and then the Cardinals have a bright future.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Rosen can't win this job or he shouldn't win this job. I'm just saying I don't think it's I feel it feels like the hype of getting that quarterback in the first round might be getting ahead of some things right now. And I want to see it all play out. I mean, Steve Wilks has said it multiple times. Sam Bradford's our starter, but he also says the top 11 guys are going to play. That clearly there has not been a door closed on having a rookie starting quarterback right away. So we'll see.
And in the first minute of his press conference, with his one weekly meeting with the media during OTAs, he did not hesitate to cite Josh Rosen as a player who stood out. He did it in the first minute of his press conference. Said he looked great. Said he was right on point with some of his timing throws to the running backs and tight ends. So that was intriguing.
He's got a good feel. And what Christian Kirk said that was intriguing to me was the touch that Josh Rosen puts on the ball. Because especially thinking back to Logan Thomas, who came in fourth round pick, and he was always a project. But he had a great arm, but he never had that touch. He didn't understand how to take the velocity off the ball. And I think Blaine Gabbert, to an extent, had that issue where they both had great arms. They can make deep throws to the sideline when you needed to fit it into a window. But the majority of passes in the NFL are a lot of quarterbacks can make it. You just have to have that touch. You have to be accurate so the guy can catch it and get some yards after the catch, hit him in stride. And I think Rosen has a good feel for those types of passes.
I would say one of the most pleasant things for me, having watched this team for so many years and so many different quarterback rooms and guys that they've run out there is, and I've said this multiple times when we've done this podcast, I am a huge believer in you better come into the party with accuracy already, because I don't think you can learn it to the level that you need it on this, on the NFL level, if you don't already have it. And that was my concern of Lamar Jackson. That was my concern of a Josh Allen. And being able to watch Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen right now, and even to a lesser extent, you know, Mike Glennon's been okay. The Princeton kid. Kanoff?
Number six, I know him as, otherwise known as Chad Kanoff.
Kanoff.
Thank you.
Even he's shown me, in what little I've seen of him, he seems fairly accurate. And it's kind of cool to watch in practice having all these quarterbacks being that accurate. But clearly the top two guys in Rosen and Bradford, the accuracy, you know, again, we talked about the jitters Rosen had a little bit, or we were going to. Maybe the other day at practice rookie minicamp, but ultimately these guys are accurate guys, and it shows on the field.
Well, if you take that very first practice that you just cited, rookie minicamp, and the first 15 minutes to a half hour, and a number of balls nosedive during just drills on air, and you're man, what exactly is the deal with Josh Rosen? People are talking. I know I was. And then all of a sudden, slowly but surely,
you're a talker, though.
He started to excel. Well, somebody had to do the talking, because Wolf kept feeding his face with snacks from every pocket of his cargo shorts, rocking the dad bod and the dad shorts with all the snacks. And so I'm like, what's the deal with all those balls hitting the ground on air? And then slowly, And then all of a sudden he's hitting some of those deep outs and some of the seam patterns, and Wolf smacking me in the shoulder. Did you see that? And then by the end, he hit that 40-yarder to Christian Kirk, which was beautiful when he got behind the secondary. And I cite that because if that illustrates his ability to navigate a learning curve and conquer each little challenge in front of him as a rookie, then if I'm the coach or the general manager, what is the upside? At some point, you're going to have to give him the reins, because he's going to have to learn on the job, and then where's he going to go from there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very good indicator, because, I mean, imagine going into rookie minicamp, having all these guys you've never thrown to, you don't know exactly where they're cutting or how fast they are. I mean, it's a kind of a situation where you're more likely to fail than succeed. So if you can't adapt, I mean, that's what the NFL is all about, especially when you get to the starting level and you're figuring out what the defense is doing, and it's a game of chess, and you have to figure out how to combat the defense that they're running. If you can figure out blitzes, if you can figure out coverages. So this is to a much smaller extent, but if he does show that ability to adapt on the fly, like you said, that's a huge plus.
I mean, just the progress he made in that one practice, right? Every time he goes to cock his arm back, all the camera shutters go off and everyone's looking at him.
Well, he's still a number one quarterback.
Yes. I mean, what was interesting was what DJ Humphrey said. I don't know if you guys were there, but he was talking about how he just respects Josh Rosen because he's himself. The same guy you saw on draft night doing the interviews is the same guy in the locker room, is the same guy in the huddle.
Yeah.
And if that's the case and the veterans are already buying in, just because he's real, he's himself, that's not a facade, that's not showtime, that's not showbiz, that's just who he is, then I think that helps him in that locker room a lot.
Well, and Humphreys, I mean, it's not a surprise to hear it from a guy like DJ because he's been the same way.
Yeah.
He might be more a little bit more vocal now and easygoing because he's set as an NFL guy and he struggled earlier in his career, but he's always been easygoing. He's always been confident, and DJ is a guy who I think is naturally going to gravitate to players with personalities like that. So obviously it's a nice mix. There's a lot of different personalities on the team, though, and maybe some guys like some guys and others don't. And it's hard when you have 53 yeah. or 90 right now, but overall, yeah, I think the Rosen personality thing has been way overblown.
By the way, the biggest headliner to me in Steve Wilks meeting the media is when he said, and I quote, "I've said this before, I think our strength is O-line. We have good depth. I want those guys to push each other, and everything we do starts up front." If he really believes that the strength of that Cardinals offense is the O-line, oh, man, let's start the season tomorrow. Let's ball.
Well, the one issue
is that lip service, or you think he's being real?
I think there's a belief that this offensive line can be pretty good. They got to stay healthy, which they haven't. I was talking to AQ Shipley, and he's like, look, people can talk about what we've done the last couple of years, and he goes, obviously we would have liked as a unit to play better, but we weren't out there. And he's not wrong. And you can talk about whether that's, you know, whose fault that is or whether it is somebody's fault. But, I mean, you got to stay healthy. But and the other thing, too, is, again, mid-May, when you're talking about being in shorts and no pads and not really hitting anybody, it's really hard to know exactly what this offensive line is going to be. But, you know, Steve Wilks believes in his upfront guys. I mean, he said it every single time he's had a chance, is the offensive and defensive line are the most important things. And I do think this offensive line is going to be in a better place if they stay healthy because, one, I think there's going to be more of an emphasis on the run, and all offensive linemen like that because you're not getting beat for sacks when you're running the ball, number one. Number two, I think there is going to be more of a shift to what a lot of successful teams run these days, whether it's the Patriots or the Seahawks or the Falcons, and more three-step drops and a quick passing offense. That also helps an offensive line pass protect because you just don't have to do it as long. And
sure,
everybody loved Bruce Arians, and that offense was unbelievable in 2015, but it took a toll. It took a toll on Carson Palmer. It took a toll on that offensive line because the longer you are and the longer routes that you run out there, the more chance there is for a defender to get to that quarterback and pile up hits and pile up sacks. And I think it's going to be harder for defenses to do that. And I think that will help this line too, which will play into it being a strength.
I don't break down the film, but I defy you to take one game from the Bruce Arians era and use more than one hand to count all the three-step drops in a single game. Just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Just there, wasn't part of the offense.
He would do the wide receiver screens a couple times a game, but other than that, it was very rare.
By the way, let's just get it out of the way. David Johnson, what do you think? I mean, do we need to pump our brakes on the optimism? I mean, the guy's in phenomenal shape. He's been working out his legs ever since week one of last year. I mean, you know,
the first thing I thought of when everybody starts talking about how great David looked, I mean, he should. I mean, his the moneymakers, the legs, they're fine. He broke his wrist, and that wasn't good, and it needed a long time to heal, but it's healed now. And it wasn't his legs or his knees, and it wasn't his head, and that's a big deal. And so I would think talent wise, he should be able to step right back to where he was in 2016.
So stop right there. Did you notice at the very end of the press conference, and he was asked again about the fullback, Steve Wilks said, well, you know, it's never a bad thing to have someone else take the blow first.
Yeah.
And then you realize, okay, now wait a minute. How much of the fullback is just the offense? And how much of the fullback is to try and keep David Johnson healthy? Even though he got hurt on a pass route, obviously last year in Detroit, the fullback basically designed as a shield for David Johnson?
I think Mike McCoy is the reason there's the fullback, not David Johnson.
Yeah, it's a scheme thing, and you think you can figure out
system, not a scheme, Kyle.
Scheme and system, but I mean, if David Johnson
the
touches
the pool or the pond,
yeah. If he gets 25 touches, 30 touches in a game, he's gonna get hit quite a bit. And whether there's a fullback, whether there's a lot of blockers or not, I mean, at that position, you're going to take a lot of wear and tear, and you just have to hope that he stays healthy because he's a great player, but he's a running back. And, you know, obviously we saw it last year. Those guys take punishment, one bad hit, and it can knock you out. So you just kind of have to keep your fingers crossed. And the fullback won't be there the whole time. He might take the lead block, the lead guy coming at him, but there might be two or three more linebackers flying at him anyways.
There was one play where I smacked Wolf. It was like an empty set.
I think you guys just like hitting each other.
And David Johnson motioned into the slot. I'm not going to deny that. And Christian Kirk just, I mean, he just went and he zoomed off the line and it was about 7 yards and he did a quick slant and Rosen hit him in stride and you're like, wow. And he left the slot corner in the dust. Now, with some no-name, I don't even remember the number, much less the name. But that guy's not making the team, I'm presuming. But
hater.
But Christian Kirk, I mean, that was interesting to see that sort of speed and then the soft hands, and then he was gone down the middle of the field. Because, I mean, think about it. If David Johnson's getting his attention and Larry Fitzgerald's commanding his attention – and then Christian Kirk as a third option. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I think you needed that type of guy on this offense, and it certainly seems like Christian Kirk has the ability to step in pretty quickly and make an impact, where the last couple of years, John Brown did it, but Chad Williams didn't make an impact as a rookie, and sometimes that's up in the air whether it happens. Christian Kirk just seems very polished. He's intelligent enough to figure out what he needs to do, you know, on certain plays, especially if there's option routes and you have to read the defense. He seems like he's a guy who can come in and have that type of impact. And like you said, that's big because Fitz and David Johnson will take a lot of attention. And if you get him one-on-one and he makes the guy miss, that's a big play. So I think that was an important draft pick for this season especially.
And by the way, was Steve Wilks asked about Christian Kirk and the reports? Well, where he ended up in a police report after the Phoenix Open and those charges and what is pending. Yes, he was asked about it. He did confirm the Cardinals knew about it before the draft. They did their own investigation. They're well aware of everything, and they are trusting the process right now to play out in and of itself and let it go from there. So we'll see where it does go from there. Right now, Christian Kirk is a Cardinal. He's out on that practice field. And I would say in the receiver room, the next most important name would be Chad Williams.
Yeah.
How realistic is it to think he can make that leap from year one to year two? Because most definitely and certainly he needs to.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think need is a big thing. I mean, could he have made strides last year? Could he and should he have made an impact? I mean, ultimately, he didn't do enough to warrant them wanting to put him on the field. But at the same time, he came into a much different situation. At this time last year, everybody was thinking, you know, J.J. Nelson was obviously still around. Everybody thought John Brown was still going to be able to make a big impact. You still had Jerron Brown. There wasn't a whole lot at this point people were expecting of Chad Williams. So he went into this part of the year learning stuff on a little bit different of a level. Whereas if you're Christian Kirk, you're walking in and with a new coach and no loyalty to the guys that have already been here.
Sure.
Now, Christian Kirk, they're saying you need to be that guy. So I think that helps a rookie in terms of making a quick impact, knowing that they're going to have to come to you. So you better be laser focused. Now, when it comes to Chad Williams, you know, we've talked to him a few times. I think he has the right mindset. Whether he can take that step, I don't know. But I do know that there is a wide open opportunity for whomever, whether it's Christian Kirk or Chad Williams or anybody after Fitz, you know, Kobe Hamilton coming into this team, you know, all these guys where there's holes, especially since at this point there's no other than Ricky Seals-Jones, maybe a tight end that's going to take those catches. Now, we talked about David Johnson, Kyle, and he's clearly going to get the ball and he's clearly going to split out wide sometimes. So that's part of this equation, too.
Yeah, I think we'll see how it goes, but there's a lot of different guys that can make an impact. And Steve Wilks, much like Bruce Arians, he talked about, once you get here, I don't care about your draft status, how much money you're making because of free agency, whatever. He's going to put him out there. The best guy plays at that number two wide receiver spot. I think Chad Williams is definitely being given every opportunity. I think they're going to give him the reps and hopefully he can do something with it because he was a third round pick. Similarly, on the defensive side, Brandon Williams and Robert Kimdichie, a couple of guys with a lot of talent that haven't done it in the NFL yet. I think they're saying, okay, here is your opportunity. Make the most of it. I think those guys aren't buried on the depth chart or anything. I think they want them to really seize these roles, and it's just up to those players to do it. I think they realize that looking around. If they play well in the offseason, they can be starters and have big roles. And then, you know, over the next few months, we'll see if it pans out.
And real quick, when it comes to those latter two guys, the defensive guys, Brandon Williams and Robert Kamdichi, I mean, it's not just giving the – I mean, they're running around with the first string. And it's summer and it doesn't really make a difference. But in terms of putting the guys around them to have it look the most like it would in the NFL season to see if they fit in that group, they're getting that chance. They're going to have – if it doesn't work for either one of them, they're not going to be able to say, well, I was buried and I didn't get a chance with a new coach. That's for sure.
Do you guys believe the other starting cornerback is currently on the roster? Whether it's a Brandon Williams, Benet Benwickery, Lou Young has flashed a little bit here in the offseason. You got the sixth-round rookie Chris Campbell, who's actually made a couple of plays and got a couple of shout-outs from the head coach, who has a history of developing guys like that. By the way, when I look at Chris Campbell at 6'1", he's got that athleticism. I think of a corner like the Seahawks would draft in the fifth or sixth round. Yeah. He sort of has that Seahawks
look. That worked out pretty well for the Seahawks.
Yes. I mean, honestly. Do you anticipate that the other guy across from Patrick Peterson is currently on the roster?
I'm gonna put it like this, because I think that's undecided. I think they want somebody on this roster to step up. Would I rule it out? I'm not going to rule it out. I mean, we saw what happened with Tremont Williams last year. I think when we were at this time last year, they wanted somebody on this roster, Brandon Williams or Justin Bethel, to step in. They were hopeful for it, and then they got to training camp and realized, okay, we better get somebody else in here. I think we're going to go through these next 5-6 weeks, whatever it is, through mini camp, and they're going to assess what they've got. And if we get to training camp and a guy signs early in training camp with any kind of veteran pedigree, I think we're going to know our answer to that.
Yeah, and when you look at this time of year, offensive, defensive linemen, it's so hard to take any sort of judgment on guys like that because they're so limited. But at cornerback, once you start going offense, defense, you can kind of see how they move, see how they handle different routes against them. So I think this is definitely a big time. I would lean toward yes. I mean, they have some different options, and clearly you're not the second cornerback, the way we look at it, isn't going to be this big strength. But if they can just find a serviceable guy among the one they have, you'd be thrilled in that scenario. And I think there's enough options right now where it wouldn't surprise me if the person's already on the roster.
And I would say also that I think there's a couple other – I mean, they don't have to just pick one or the other one, but I mean – if they're going to sign a veteran, I would think, you know, maybe tight end would be something they would look at. Even we were just talking about receiver. I think receiver might be we haven't talked about Bryce Butler at all, but he's been banged up, so he hasn't been able to do a whole lot, and we'll see where he fits in. But maybe even receiver would be something that they would look at, maybe even before cornerback, because, again, as you mentioned, Steve Wilks has got a history of working with, let's say, lesser-named guys and making them work in the secondary if that front seven works the way he wants it to. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it right now.
Last topic here on Cardinals Underground. What's the deal with the hurdle in the middle of the Cardinals locker room with chains around it? Sort of a velvet rope, if you will. No touch. There's a hurdle like you would see at track and field. It's right in the middle of the locker room. I know one of you guys knows the answer. Somebody go.
You have to mentally clear the hurdle. Was that what DJ Humphreys said it like the most eloquent, beautifully way?
He's a wordsmith.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, he's.
You know what? I do have the transcript here loosely. He said that's TAC, trust, accountability, and commitment. So that's what they've nicknamed it TAC, in case you're wondering.
Which is a Steve Wilks thing: trust, accountability, and commitment.
And he says, you know, this is what coach believes. This is what we're pushing the rest of the year. You don't touch it. He was admonishing the media. Don't touch TAC. Okay. But every day you mentally jump over it, and everyone around you as well. You have to mentally jump over that hurdle every single day. I guess you got to clear the trust, accountability, and commitment threshold every single day.
I felt like breaking into applause after that, because he laid it out so well, and everybody was just mesmerized. Like, hey, that was great, DJ. Thanks for clearing that up.
Steve Wilks would be very proud, I'm guessing, if he saw the sound.
They did a little infomercial for him.
I mean, for May, he spoke like a guy who'd heard that a couple hundred times already. Yeah.
It's always, and coaches always talk about that. It's kind of like when players during interview sessions start parroting what coaches have told them in meetings, and not important plays or stuff, but like trust, accountability, commitment, those kinds of things, the mantras that these coaches want to, when they start hearing the players parroting it to the media, that's when they know the message has gotten across. They coaches love that.
All right. Well, and I'll tell you, talking to some of the defensive guys, because we spent so much time talking about the offense and the quarterback, obviously, and offensive line, talking to some of the defensive guys, they like the scheme, or is it a system? What is it on defense? Is it a scheme or a system? What are we calling it right now?
I believe Steve Wilks has made it very clear. Yeah. It's never a scheme. It's always about the system.
Because we're still in the embryonic stages. But they like the attacking system, and they believe that a lot of the guys, I think, believe they can be very productive. And when you get in that kind of buy-in from those guys, look out, because they enjoy piling up stats, and the stats turn into dollar signs, and all of a sudden you really do have a defense that's flying around.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at Carolina, what they've done the last few years, and there aren't the same pieces, but there are a lot of similar type guys between these teams. Both teams have star power on defense, and the Cardinals were obviously no slouch themselves, so you know the personnel is here. Most of the guys that were impact guys last year are back, and it's exciting because they know their own talent. And then I think, like you said, a lot of them have really bought into what Steve Wilks is telling them. He's going to be aggressive. It's going to look a little bit different, but those guys love to blitz. They love to, if they can get one-on-one matchups at defensive end to Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, they'll love all that. So I agree with you. There's definitely a level of excitement that they can make some plays.
So if I have a hurdle delivered to your cubicle area a little bit later, don't take it personally, gentlemen. We're just trying to get the most out of you on floor three here at Cardinals
headquarters. Better be a small hurdle.
Every time you guys go to your desk, you're going to have to clear the hurdle before you sit down to write and report. Just put up in floor three.
What's our workman's comp policy? Would I try to hurt?
Paul, you can just sit in your chair. We'll just leap you.
Okay, there we go. There we go. Well, that's what I get. That's the kind of blowback you can expect. There, I try to get cute, and it blows up in my face. There you go. Pauly Podcast. This is a good time to hit the exit button.
Yes.
Here on Cardinals Underground.